Ladies and gentlemen, this is, after a very wet week, a fairly dry edition of the James Whale Radio Show.
James Whale, the voice of reason on the James Whale Radio Show.
Now, welcome to the programme. It is the James Whale Radio Show with special guest, Boy George. I'll be talking to George about love, life, music and food. And anything else in between a little bit later on in what I hope will be a fairly revealing interview about George, culture club music and reggae and all that sort of stuff. As you know, I'm a huge fan. So George is on the show later on today. You might say, actually, it's more of a George special. We'll be talking to him in around about 10, 15 minutes' time. Rob's producing the show as usual today, all right?
Yes, I'm here. I'm awake today.
Are you awake? Well, that makes a change. Have you got everything sorted? Are we broadcasting on all cylinders?
All cylinders, all round the globe.
Good. A quick hi to all those of you listening to us on internet radio stations around the world, listening to us via talentgb.com. If you haven't checked them out, do so. Those of you who listen to us on Audio Boo and a whole host, far too many for me to mention now, there are about 30-odd radio stations who broadcast this program, and if you're one of them, thank you very much indeed. And if you're not and you want to be, get in touch with Rob. You can do that by emailing jameswhaleradio@gmail.com. Now, I wanted to start, listen, I tell you what I wanted to start off today, something that has been very much in the news this week, and that is about the refugees coming out of Syria. Now, a number of countries, the UN, have worked out a formula for people to take refugees from Syria. For some reason, Britain doesn't want to sign up to this. After some pressure from our own politicians on each other, we have decided to take a few hundred. Now, remember, there are a couple of million refugees in Syria, predominantly people whose lives have been completely torn apart, people who have suffered torture, people who have suffered bereavement, young children, families who have just been thrown into the street. Let me just put this in your mind. Imagine today and this week and for the last couple of weeks how the weather has been. And in Syria, it's pretty cold at this time of year in most areas. Just imagine if you and I were living outside at the moment in the wet, the cold, the dirt, the flooding, the filth, not to mention the bombs that they're having to put up with. I've listened to a lot of phone-in programs over the past week of people talking about this, and a lot of people, and you know, the interesting thing is, a lot of older people who seem to be very anti us taking anyone from Syria. And I find that amazing. Absolutely amazing, because half the time I hear people going on about, you know, what a terrible country this is because we don't believe in God, the majority of people don't go to church, and we're not a God-fearing country. And then I hear people quite often talking about how, you know, how they are upset and concerned, and, you know, we're a good, but I don't want to take these people from Syria because, you know, we have enough trouble in this country. You know, we've got enough problems of our own. People are going to food banks. People can't afford to live. We've got enough problems. We really shouldn't be taking anybody from any other country. Hang on, in Syria, they'd be quite happy to have food banks, wouldn't they? I don't know if you've got any thoughts on this, but I'd be fascinated to hear your feeling. Listen, 400 or 500 refugees from Syria isn't going to make any difference at all. If we had 4,000 or 5,000 refugees coming in here from Syria, it wouldn't make any difference to you or me, would it? Or am I out of step? I might be out of step. I don't know. But of course, if you want to tell me, Facebook me, email me, jameswhaleradio@gmail.com. I just find the whole thing, I find more and more people arguing, and as I said, I might be doing older people a disservice, but I hear a lot of older people on the radio saying, oh, you know, we give too much, we're far too easygoing, we let lots and lots of people into this country and we don't have any control. I don't know if that's true, is it? Or is it? Do you feel swamped? Let me ask Rob. There we are, up in North Wales. Are you swamped?
No, and two of my best friends are Syrian.
Are they?
Hmm.
Should we be taking more?
Need to do our bit, I think, like everyone else.
Germany's taking something like 10,000 refugees.
That's a lot.
I think we are showing ourselves in a very, very poor light if we continually go on about how swamped we are. And listen, I'm not talking about those people who come here illegally. Those people who break into our country illegally. We find those people who come here for no reason at all, other than they think they'll be able to steal of us, get them out of the country as soon as possible. I have no problem with that. But there are people who come here in fear of their lives, and we should be making them welcome and looking after them, shouldn't we? You tell me. Tweet me at the James Whale. Facebook me. Email me. Tell me what you think. I'd be fascinated. That was one of the things. The other thing we threw out the other day, by the way, was whether or not we need the royal family. Is the royal family good value? Of course, it's been in the news that our palaces are crumbling. But what do you think? I mean, you're living in Wales. Do we want a royal family, do you think?
I think we should have a royal family. It's either that or a president.
Well, yes. Or people like Caroline Smith, who says, can we put them all in one palace? Then put up big glass walls and then sell tickets like a zoo. I wonder why people are so anti the royal family. Colin Ibbotson. Colin, I suppose you must be, I don't know, perhaps you don't like yourself very much indeed, Colin. I've no idea. Colin says, get rid of the useless waste of time. Well, you know them, do you, Colin? You've met members of the royal family. You know for a fact that they're all a useless waste of time, do you? He says, what an expensive, diabolical and senseless regime it is. Does the Queen pay bedroom tax, or any other mansion-dwelling gits pay it for that reason? Colin, you must be a very unpopular person, mustn't you? I imagine you don't have very many friends. Luckily, there are some people, of course, who realise that the value of the royal family way outweighs the drain on this society. In fact, actually, I think we ought to put a bit more money, shouldn't we, into the royal family? Just to sort of zhush it up a little bit. I bet you if we had a president, I bet you it would cost us more. Sandy Bannatyne says, some people want to erode our identity. The royal family are known all over the world for being British. I'm for supporting them every step of the way. We need to keep hold of every little bit of Britain we can before it all disappears. Interesting point from Sandy. Shelley Highland says, we do need them. And I wish everybody would get off their case. If there's some I don't mind keeping, it's the royals. Without them, this country would be totally finished as far as I'm concerned. It's going to the dogs and fast. Well, I don't think, Shelley, I don't think it's all we need. I think the royal family are... what would we do? What would we do if we got rid of the royal family? How would we get... What would we do? What the French did? Gosh, I hope not. And presumably, the Queen being one of the wealthiest women in the world, she'd probably find it a bit of a relief. We'd then have to pay for the palaces that apparently we own anyway. We'd have to keep them kept up. And I don't think if you turned, for argument's sake, Windsor Castle, Buckingham Palace and others into museums, because if you didn't have the royals living there and using them, they would become museums. I don't think it would be as interesting. Obviously, the president, maybe Tony Blair became the president. I don't know. Maybe he would. And he would want to live somewhere. Where would he live? Probably live in Buckingham Palace. Surely better that we have people who are prepared to do the job for not very much money. In fact, the Queen is trying to be so frugal that the problems are that she's not spending enough money on keeping the roof fixed. You know, the same with all council housing, really, or all social housing. If you look at it that way, not enough money spent on repairs. And she's trying to keep it going. She doesn't own the palace. We own the palace now, but she's trying to keep it going from the money she gets. And I'm sure she must be spending some of her money on it. She's never going to be able to spend all the money she's got. I don't understand why some people get themselves so upset about the royal family. Chris Archer says, definitely not. True British monarchy died with Victoria. Why should the British taxpayer fund the royals' lavish lifestyles? Come on, Chris. Do you really think, compared with the Victorian royal family, when life was different anyway, but do you really think they have a lavish lifestyle now? I mean, they're ambassadors for the country, aren't they? I mean, surely they do more good than they do harm. Andy Cook says, good for tourism, and that's just about all. Monarchs through history were not very pleasant bunch. They used to rule on fear. Well, they don't rule us now. They're a monarchy without power. The power they do have is there as a buffer, if you like, between the politicians and us. And if we didn't have them there, perhaps we would feel slightly more aggravated by some of the things politicians do. So surely it's good value for money. Wouldn't we all want to vote a bit of more money spent on the palaces? Well, not at the moment, because we haven't got any money. But if we had a bit more, would we want to do that? We'd find money to pay for paintings of Diana Abbott and other politicians, David Davis and Ian Duncan Smith. They're all having pictures of themselves taken and put up. And we're paying for that as well. I'd rather pay a little more money to have the roof of Buckingham Palace fixed. Matthew Feeney says, I'm surprised that the Tories haven't sold them off. They've flogged everything else. Yeah. Well, that's what politicians do, wasn't it? Gordon Brown, Labour leader who flogged off the gold. Wrong time, maybe. I don't know. Cliff Marsh says, people say they're good for tourism. Crap, he says. Whoever heard of someone not visiting the UK because the Queen was on a visit to another of her expensive states? Yes, Cliff, I think they are good for tourism, though, mate. I really do. I think people think of Britain and they think of royalty. And they're there as a sort of, they're kind of like a national PR company, aren't they? We'd have to, if we didn't have the royal family, we'd have to pay for what they do. I mean, OK, we do pay, but I think we'd have to pay a lot more, wouldn't we? And would we actually feel good about ourselves if we just got rid of the royal family? It wouldn't make much difference to them, but it would make any difference to us. You're very quiet, Rob. Are you frightened of being taken to the Tower or what?
Well, you know, you never should argue with the Queen.
We live in a democracy, and that's the good thing, and you can suggest that she does other things.
I might get an OBE one day, and she might listen back to this and go, he's not having one.
Well, I don't think you should have an OBE, but that's by the by.
Working with you.
Do you know what OBE stands for?
What?
Other buggers' efforts.
I'm looking forward to the presidential variety performance.
I just want a knighthood. Lord Whale.
You can buy them.
Oh, yeah, so you can. So you can. Lastly on this, Kate Umpleby, who... do you know, I headmaster... Mr. Umpleby was a headmaster in the school I went to, in the secondary school I went to, Linton's Lane in Epsom, many, many years ago. Kate says, the only people who don't want the royal family are those who can't get a job because they don't want one, won't get a job, are lower than a snake's belly, think they deserve a living for nothing. I'm proud to be British. I respect the royal family. I will support them till my dying day. You know, thank you, Kate. I don't think you need to go quite that far. It's interesting, isn't it? People get really worried. It's like religion. You talk about the royal family and it's like talking about religion. Some people just can't talk about it without getting really, really angry. I mean, live and let live. Yeah, we have people, I think, doing a good job. Just let them get on with it. Surely it's quite a nice thing to have a royal family. They don't have any control over your life or my life. They don't have any say over what we do. I mean, surely that's good. Anyway, listen, have your say again. Facebook me. Put your thoughts on Facebook. Tweet me or send me an email or a Gmail. JamesWhaleRadio@gmail.com is where you can find us. And have your say. Is that right, Rob? Am I doing it well, okay?
You're doing it all by yourself this week.
Well, I'm just waiting for you to chip in occasionally. I'll tell you what, let's pay the bills. I always hate that on radio when you hear somebody going, okay, let's pay the bills, take a commercial break. We're trying to run it without putting commercial. We're going to, you know, we do have to finance this. One of the ways we finance the program is by you getting hold of a copy, an audio copy of my book. We don't have to have my book, actually. But it would be better if you did, wouldn't it?
Definitely. Or Butterfly Boy.
Or Butterfly. Now, that's another one I've read. Butterfly Boy. But we have a little deal going with Audible. And if you are a member of Amazon...
Doesn't have to be.
You don't have to be. You can sign up for this. But if you're a member of Amazon, you don't even have to sign up, do you?
No.
So what you do is you go to the website and you click on the Audible link. And by registering with Audible, you get a free book. Now, the free book could be a free copy, which I've read this, of my autobiography. So you get me reading it. Or if you listen, have a listen to another one I've done. If you've got the book and you don't want that, get Butterfly Boy. Because I spent 4 days of my life in a studio as well reading Butterfly Boy. It's a really interesting book. I think it would make a cracking movie. It's all about an artist who gets polio, who lives during the time of Hitler in Germany. He's got a Jewish mother and a German father, and he contracts polio, so he becomes disabled. And obviously, we know what Hitler thought of disability. It's a really interesting book. Have a listen. So anyway, to get a copy of anything you want, my autobiography for free, though, you just click the link to register, and it's like a book club. The first book you get is free, and if you register, then we get some money to keep this show going. So just go to the website, follow the links, and you get a free copy of my book. You get a free copy of anybody's book. Right, how are we doing for time? Is it time, do you think, to meet George or not?
It is, but just to clarify, just go to the jameswhaleradio.co.uk website, not just any website, register for the book.
All right, jameswhaleradio.co.uk. So go there, jameswhaleradio.co.uk. Wherever you're listening to us, go to that website, click on Audible, get your book free. And then you can have me talking in your ear when you're in the gym, when you're in the bath, when you're walking or jogging or whatever you're doing. Now, time to meet one of my music heroes, the legendary Boy George. I don't know about you, but I just love the music from Culture Club. What is George up to at the moment? Let's find out.
Come on, come on, come on, come on, come on, come on. Oh, here he is.
Are you there, George?
Yes, I'm here.
Good. How many phones have you got in your house?
Only three, but they're rubbish. I've really got to replace them.
Oh dear.
Right, are you ready?
Yes.
Actually, I like that bit. We'll start off with that. We can always sort of, I think everybody has to have three phones in their house.
Well, you know, it's a system, three phones in different rooms, but unfortunately, sometimes they get misplaced and they don't ring and one's out of range and all that kind of stuff.
Tell me, listen, I am fed up to the back teeth with this weather.
Yeah, the weather doesn't bother me, really. It's quite cold, though. It's quite cold, but it doesn't really bother me whether it's sunny or raining or whatever. I always have a good time.
Oh, well, that's good. You're lucky. Every time it gets dark and damp and rainy, I get depressed.
Really?
Yeah, no, I'm quite depressed with this weather. I want to see the sunshine.
You see, I remember years ago reading this thing that said, never let the weather sort of dictate your mood of any day.
I don't know. Let me ask you, because, you've gone through your kind of dark, depressed sort of times. How come you're so happy now? Every time I've seen you interviewed or every time I've heard you speaking, you sound in a really good place.
Well, there's a lyric on my album that says, here in the darkness I became the light. I had to get it wrong to get it right. And I think that really sums it up. You know, I think, you know, the thing is, you're talking about being depressed, I suppose, because it's more of a kind of chemical reaction in your body. Which in my case, it was putting chemicals in my body. No, in my case, it was more self-inflicted kind of, you know, behaviour. So, you know, I think once you kind of make a decision to stop that, you know, it kind of stops clouding your vision and you can kind of see, you know, what's good about your life. But also, I think getting older is a huge thing. You know, I think you get older and you suddenly start thinking, you know, I'm too old to do this. I'm too old to behave like this. And, you know, not to go dancing or anything like that. You know, I DJ a lot in Italy and they go out in their 60s and their 70s, you know. You know, whereas over here, people get to 30 and they sort of give up. you know. So I'm more Italian that way. But I think, yeah, it's just getting things in perspective, really, James, you know.
Well, yes, you know, I'm a bit older than you, and when Culture Club first started, I was playing records on the radio, and so and then I kind of ended up not playing very many records and never shutting up, which I don't know if that's good or bad, but maybe now in my old age I should become a DJ again.
You could do. I mean, actually, funny enough, actually, Mikey and Roy from Culture Club are in my living room right now. We should have gone full circle, so maybe you should become a DJ.
Well, I tell you what, we'll get on to talking about more about you in a minute, but I tell you what I'm missing. I'm missing reggae.
Well, it's almost summer, so you're going to get two wishes, aren't you? Because the sunshine usually brings reggae music. I mean, that's the thing about summer. You suddenly start hearing Bob Marley everywhere and people start playing kind of Lover's Rock. And, you know, it's definitely something to do with the sunshine. You know, this isn't really reggae weather, although I play reggae all the time.
But when I was a kid, I used to go to basement clubs in Brixton long before I ever started working in the media. And there was some of the most amazing music.
Music generally has got quite cliquey again, you know, like everything's genre-fied. And, you know, in the way that, you know, radio has become very formulaic now. You know, like if you go back to the 70s, which I always do, if you think about the 70s as a decade, it was the most bonkers decade. You know, you turn on Top of the Pops, you'd have Mrs. Mills playing a piano, you'd have disco, you'd have reggae, you'd have Cliff, you'd have all these sort of really contradictory things happening at the same time. And radio was like that. Now, you have to kind of make a record for radio. I mean, I don't, but you, if you're a kind of young artist, it's like, which format are you going to fall into? And you hear a lot of people saying, oh, so-and-so's the new Adele, even though Adele's only made a couple of albums, you know. It's very different now. So we were kind of lucky to kind of, be, I mean, 60s, 70s, you know, even 80s to some degree, and the 90s. There was a bit of, seemed like there was a bit of freedom, and it felt like the artists were dictating the art form, and that isn't the case anymore.
Is that true? I mean, I thought back in those days, it was really difficult to get a record deal. It was really difficult to get a job in the media. Now, people are starting up their own record labels. There are radio stations everywhere you look. It seems to be a lot easier, surely.
Well, I think it's. I think the irony of all of that is that, you know, technology has allowed greater access to a lot more people to make music, but they're all making the same record. Everybody's making the same record because everybody's got their eye on the fur coat. Everybody wants the kind of the lifestyle that assumedly goes with the career. You know, if you take someone like Lady Gaga, she looks amazing, but her music could be any EDM artist to a certain degree. It seems to be there's a formula for making successful records. And, I'm lucky because I'm old as well, so I don't have to kind of try and compete with the youngsters, and I'm so relieved to go back to the sort of 60s, to the music that I love, because that kind of music never really kind of goes away. You know, it's always kind of, people always love it, you know. But I think if I was an artist right now, I would really struggle. I come from an era, you know, where artists that I loved, every record that Bowie made was like, what's he doing now? You know, it was like a completely different person.
Yeah, but, you know, the interesting thing is, I was watching the Grammys the other night, and I don't know whether you saw it or not, but Paul McCartney and Ringo Starr got together and played a number. And I thought, and I'm sorry, I'm going to commit some kind of heresy or whatever now, but I just thought it was terrible. I thought, what a shame. Why do that? Because they wouldn't do it when the four of them were all able to do it. Why just the two of them do it now and it's not as good?
It, but I'm kind of a little bit like, I'm always very uncomfortable about saying anything horrible about Paul McCartney because I just feel like he's done so much to kind of contribute to kind of music in a way over the years and has this incredible legacy. So I'm a little bit blinded when it comes to Paul McCartney. The Beatles, the Rolling Stones, you know, I'm a little bit kind of, you know, it's like, I find it difficult because I'm a big fan, you know, so I find it really difficult to join in when people start dragging them off.
All right, listen, when I was at school, you were either a Stones fan or a Beatles fan. Obviously, I was a Stones fan. What about you?
I've always loved both. I mean, I think the Beatles, you know, I'm a massive John Lennon fan, obviously, but
yeah.
I loved Wings. You know, when Wings were going, we all loved Wings. We're all liars. We all loved it. I mean, I remember playing those records, you know, very loudly, you know. I've always loved kind of, you know, both those bands, you know, the Stones for different reasons, the Beatles because they're the Beatles and they've done incredible things, you know, Sgt. Pepper, Revolver. You know, most bands can kind of say, oh, I've got three or four great songs, you know. But when you look at the Stones and the Beatles, there's just endless. You always remember another song. Oh, I remember that one, this one, you know. I was rowing with a 10-year-old girl about 2 weeks ago about the Stones. This 10-year-old girl was trying to tell me they were rubbish. And I was like, you will not always feel like this. You will grow out of that feeling.
Yeah, but the interesting thing is, you have to listen to a lot of these people when they were at the height of their career in the same way. I don't know, for argument's sake, towards the end of Sinatra's life, he wasn't singing as well as he used to.
No, but it's a hard one because when it's what you do, you know, I think, you know, smart people kind of bow out when it's kind of, you know.
Will you know when to do that?
For me, there's a point where I know I won't be able to wear makeup anymore. I've still got a few years left.
There is just not a time. The older you get, the more makeup you need.
Really? No, I don't think that's true. I think when I was younger, I was kind of under the impression that I couldn't be seen without my makeup. Now I just, you know, it only for special. I'm like a Jamaican lady going to church.
If you've got part of Culture Club in your living room, can we surmise that there is going to be another Culture Club record coming out?
Yeah, we're writing at the moment. I mean, obviously, at the moment, I'm doing my record, so I'm off to America next week to promote my record. I'm touring for the most of this year with my band, and then we are looking at doing some recording late summer, hopefully to get something out before Christmas. But, you know, we're not, until the music's right, you know, we're not really planning when we're going to do it. We've got a rough idea of what we want to do, but things don't always pan out how you want. But at the moment, we're just really enjoying writing.
Well, I hope Culture Club do have a huge smash, because I loved Culture Club. I loved all that sound. But then that's my age, probably. I don't know. But let's talk about the new single. Let's talk about My God.
Yeah.
Because I just think it's one of the best. And I sound slightly sycophantic, and for me, that's not really a good sound. But I think it's one of the best things you've done.
Oh, thank you very much. You know, I'm very proud of the whole record. And I was actually expecting a little bit more of a reaction to the song, because a couple of people did say, oh, it's controversial. And I was like, really? It didn't feel like it was, you know. But I'm surprised that there hasn't been a more of a reaction to it. But it is a very positive song. And actually, what I'm really saying is that, you know, often the people who say they have the most faith are the ones that are the most judgmental and critical and unkind. And so I'm saying, you know, if you have God in your heart, whoever that God may be, you really should be kind of giving out fruit and wearing a grass skirt. You know, you should be full of the joys of life, really. And I'm often surprised when I meet really, really religious people who just aren't joyful. You think, well, what's the point?
Did you want the song to cause more of a stir than it has?
No.
I think it's going to cause a stir, by the way.
You do?
I'm making it my life's work for the next couple of days.
Well, that's not my ambition. I just want people to kind of sing along and love it. And you know, it's kind of a personal story as well, you know, because it's about an incident in New York where a guy came up to me in a bar and gave me a kind of Christian pamphlet. And at the time, I obviously was annoyed, because I thought, well, it's a bit of an assumption, you know, how do you know that I'm, you know, a godless creature? But actually, in hindsight, I was a bit of a godless creature, and I was in a bit of a mess at that time. So years on, I kind of remembered it and just thought, you know, isn't that funny that that happened then? Do you know what I mean? The way that the universe sometimes is a bit like a mirror and kind of reflects sometimes what you don't want, you know. But, you know, in hindsight, maybe it's something that I kind of probably did need a bit of. So I kind of now look at that situation in a slightly different way, you know.
Was that was the time when you were ended up doing a bit of community service in New York and stuff like that?
It was prior to the to the kind of to the iconic moment of me in orange. so it was a bit before then, but it was, you know, it was the period leading up to all of that kind of chaos that came. Yeah,
was that good for you, do you think?
At the time, you know, I called it my media service because I know that at around the same time Naomi Campbell got community service, but she was put away in a sort of behind walls, and I was taken to the heart of Chinatown with sort of police commissioner in every shot, making sure he was getting photographed. So I was a little bit like a lamb to the slaughter, really. I mean, it was quite heavy. I mean, I had 500 photographers following me around, and it was it made the situation certainly more difficult. You know, it was like relentless. It felt a bit like a kind of public flogging for me. But you know, at the same time, you know, it was quite surreal, and I did kind of have a few moments where I just kind of stopped and thought, "What have you done? How have you pulled this one off?" I mean, I did have a few kind of, "Oh my God, what have you done now?" You know.
Changing the subject, I just want to. Who's the guitarist on My God?
It is Ali from Texas.
Brilliant.
Yeah, Ali, and then also John Femus, who's in my band. But Ali played the kind of the lead, kind of feedback, sort of Bowie-esque guitar, really. That's what we were looking for. And he was great. He played on a few tracks, actually.
I mean, it had to me, it brought back a little bit of Jimi Hendrix as well.
Yeah, well, all that stuff, you know, the 70s, as I said earlier, was kind of when I was growing up. So that was my real education to music. You know, I saw The Who when I was 14, Lou Reed. Saw Bowie when I was... I think I was around about 13, 1973. So I saw a lot of amazing things around that time, and they've really stuck with me, you know what I mean? All of those kind of bands, you know, early Dylan, stuff that I kind of discovered through Bowie as well, really.
Do you know one of the most amazing artists I ever met and I knew and I saw was and you'll probably know, you will know him, of course, called Edwin Starr. Edwin Starr, huge Motown legend, who had the biggest record was War, and that War kind of got him thrown out of the States, and of course he lived the rest of his life here in Britain, and he came on my television show many years ago, and he did a great version of War, and that song is so relevant to today.
Yeah.
And nobody's ever covered it.
No, I mean, I think... You know, there's a lot of things that, you know, for example, interviews that you used to see on TV and you think they'd never be broadcast now. You know, things like, I saw some old Julian Clary interviews recently, and I was just thinking, oh my God, he would never get on TV saying that now. And probably some of the things I've said in the past, I probably wouldn't get broadcast. You know, we have become a little bit more conservative, I think. And also, I think on the radio, you don't really hear... You hear the same sort of records, you know, if you listen to the kind of classic radio stations, you only hear certain things over and over and over. Pretty much what you hear on commercial radio is the sort of the hits repeated kind of hourly. So there's a lot of music that you don't hear unless you go on YouTube.
But you know, that's changing. I mean, this radio program I'm doing now goes out on the internet. It also gets rebroadcast by lots of smaller radio stations as well. And it means that you can get an audience all over the world. And people are actually wanting to hear stuff that they're not just having shoved down their throats, if you like.
Obviously for us, you know, we didn't have the internet. It's one of the weird things about the internet because it's given us access to so much. And yet people don't really use it. You know, often I tweet a lot about food. You know, I'm a bit obsessed with food. And I'll put an ingredient up or something that I've made, and people say, what is it? And I just think, Google it. Everything you want is on the internet. If you want to find out an old jazz singer, it's all out there. And people don't use it. You know, they really don't. And I think that's one of the great things about the internet is that you can find the most bonkers, obscure things, you know.
Let's talk about food then, George. Why, I mean, is there a possibility of you being on Celebrity MasterChef?
Never. No, those shows actually stress me out. I think, you know, if I was in a kitchen and someone shouted at me or put me under pressure, I would literally lose it. You know, kitchens and ice skating are out of the question. but I do like, you know, I'm very interested in you know, the kind of science of food, and I do a lot of kind of raw stuff, which is quite scientific. You know, you can kind of, you know, do raw stuff that's just basic salads, and you can do really extreme things that take quite a lot of time to prepare. People are starting to get much more interested in what they eat now, because people are finding out that, for example, skim milk's got titanium oxide in it, and white bread's got chicken bones in it, and, you know, you just don't know the half of it. And we're starting to kind of get this information now, so people are starting to freak out. So I think food is going to... I keep saying food's the new rock. I think it's going to be bigger and bigger, you know, over the next few years. But, you know, I'm going to do a food blog on my website, which I've just launched, but it wouldn't be on TV. I kind of wanted to be quite punky and also a bit realistic, because, you know, however good you are, you will occasionally surrender to a Snickers bar or a bag of chips.
There's no chance we could hang out and have a burger now, then?
No, unless it was a kind of dehydrated sunflower seed burger. You'd probably love that.
No!
I'll hold you to that. Yeah, I'll hold you. I took a friend of mine to a place recently, and we had what I just said, and he was amazed. He was like, this is really tasty. So it's just a question of kind of trying things, you know. But people get very, very angry about food. Sometimes I tweet something like vegan or raw, and people will tweet back, have a burger, you know, have a Fray Bentos pie. And if you wanted to do something interesting, do this. But I don't really care what other people eat. It's up to them, isn't it?
Yeah. What did you have for lunch today?
I had some Emmental cheese and some apple, which I just kind of... I got some of this, actually, cave-aged Emmental, which was delicious.
Lovely.
A slab of that and a sliced apple. Nothing nicer than apple and cheese.
Yeah. Do you like curry?
I do like Indian food, yeah. I do like Indian food, yeah.
That's all right.
There's no food I don't like. You know, food is a great invention. Whoever invented it deserves a big hug. I mean, it's a great thing. But I think, you know, over the last few years, I've lost a lot of weight, and I've discovered that overeating is actually a form of abuse, and it actually makes you feel disgusting. So I try to kind of enjoy my food. I try to keep it varied and exciting. And, you know, I try to eat as much as I need rather than more than I need. I did that for about 30 years.
My wife wanted me to ask you to encourage me to do exactly the same thing. But I said, it's like any other addiction. You have to want to do it before anybody can help you.
You do. This is true. But, you know, the thing is, what I've discovered in my later years is that self-control is a wonderful thing. I mean, it really is. You get through a day. If you're doing a kind of, you know, if you're eating a certain way, and you get through a day or a week sticking to what you set out to do, it is triumphant, James. I'm telling you, it is such a great feeling, because, you know, it also helps your head as well. You know, you just feel so focused.
Right, okay. I'm going to lose at least 1.5 stone in 2014. I've said it here, and at the end of the year, somebody will have to take me to task. So I'll just... Rob, remember that.
Sure, will do.
Well, the easiest way to do it, I'll tell you, the very basic, easy way to do it is if you have, obviously, 3 meals a day, have them at roughly the same time. Nice, you know, obviously avoiding all the kind of usual, you know, white bread, you know, processed food. Good quality food. Have 5-hour gaps between each meal. So if you have your breakfast at 8, you have your lunch at 1, your evening meal around 6 or 7. Do not drink tea or coffee between your meals. Only have coffee and tea with your meal. In between your meals, drink fizzy water or water. You will shift that weight in a few months, in a few weeks.
If I do, then the burger's on me.
When you have coffee between your meals, it's one of the big things. Coffee's food. So coffee makes you go into digestion mode, so you're not digesting what you've already eaten. So just by having water, fizzy water, this is very good advice for anyone who's trying to lose weight, and this is what I did. James was like, I can't do that. I said, if you think about all the things you have survived in your life, whoever you are, it's a walk in the park. You know, my mum went on this plan, and my mum's 75 this week. And my mum,
happy birthday,
sort of,
mum.
At first she was like, I can't do that. And I said, you were married to my father for 43 years. You can do anything.
Listen, look, George, just before we finish, and I want to, it's okay if I play your new single on this show, isn't it? The show, the video.
Absolutely, yeah, it's out now. Please go and get it.
Do just tell me your thoughts on what seems to me to be like the rise again of religiously exacerbated homophobia, particularly with the UKIP councillor recently who blamed the weather on gay marriage. Have you got any thoughts on this?
Well, it's quite crazy. I mean, you know, what's worrying, I think, is that, you know, kind of people that you assume are kind of educated, you know, people that are in office, you think, well, they've got to be a little bit smart. They must have some O-levels or some A-levels. And then you kind of read this sort of stuff and you think, okay, these people are emotionally kind of limited. You know, they're kind of stuck in some way. And that's quite shocking. You think, and these people are running the country, you know. I just think, you know, I think in economic sort of times, you know, when things are hard, people always look for a scapegoat, you know, whether it's a kind of racial thing or cultural. And, you know, gay people, I think we've been getting up people's noses because of the gay marriage thing, you know, gay adoption. I think they don't like that, you know, because it's sort of, the attitude is you've got your clubs, you know, you've got sexual freedom, go over there and be quiet. And I think, you know, sort of the gay people sort of being conservative and quite normal freaks them out. Because I think if they can put us in a fluffy pink box over here, it's great. You know, they don't have to deal with this. It's like we're sort of creatures over here. But because of the lot of gay people are kind of trying to kind of be regular, that really freaks people out, I think. And I think a lot of it's to do with that, you know. But I think if they just let people get on with it, we could forget about it. If you're happy with what you're doing and you've got your lovely little life and you're straight or you're gay or whatever it may be, why do you... I think a lot of these people spend far too long thinking about gay sex. You know, in the same way that, you know, atheists spend a lot of time thinking about God, my theory. And I think that, you know, a lot of sort of homophobic people are obsessed with gay sex and they think we have more sex than we do. They think that we're at it all the time. And, you know, as I said recently in a French newspaper, my sexuality takes up about 3 hours a month or a week at best. If I'm lucky, you know, the rest of the time I do all sorts of things everyone else does, like visit my mum, make some food, pay my taxes, do my work. And I think, you know, there are a lot of homophobic people who perhaps need to start thinking about other things.
Well, it seems this is on the minds of most religious people who are anti-homosexual, anti-gay or whatever. They seem to spend a lot of their time thinking about other people's sex life.
It is true, and it's just really odd, you know, because... What I always say is it takes two of you, I know you're straight, it takes two of you to make one of us. You know, we are in it together, as David Cameron would say. You know, one can't exist without the other. Heterosexual union makes gay people possible. So in a way, we're all kind of in this together. And, you know, I always say that, you know, I love the fact that there are straight people because they make us.
Well, and we are very happy to do that. I think the world would be a very, very sad place if we were all exactly the same. Let me pose this question to you, George, finally. There's a controversy at the moment about certain people suggesting that they can cure you if you're gay, as I'm sure you've seen. If you could be cured of being gay, would you want to be straight?
No. I mean, I don't say no because I think being gay makes me better or superior. You know, when I was very, very young, I wanted to be popular and I wanted to be liked. And I knew, you know, being a puss was going to make me a little bit of an outcast. But, you know, I never really wanted to be straight. I do know a lot of gay people who do say, oh, I wish I'd been straight or my life would have been better. But I've never felt that. You know, I've always kind of come from the point of view, there's nothing wrong with me anyway. I mean, you know, and I think, you know, I had a great conversation once with Eddie Izzard, and he said that his explanation was that, like, gay is like, if you take sexuality like a ruler, at one end you've got extreme gay, at the other you've got extreme straight, and everybody sort of comes somewhere along that margin, you know, and I think that's probably true, and I think the animals, to some extent, have got it right. you know, we sort of intellectualize it, you know, and romanticize it, but actually it's a very basic thing. And, you know, I think a lot of people, a lot of it's about fear. It's like, oh, I might be a bit gay, or I might be a bit bisexual, or I might be, you know, just stop thinking about it. You know, if you stop thinking about it, it'll be fine.
What was the line from the song? Was it Etta James, "If it feels good, do it"?
Exactly. And I think, you know, yeah, I just think a lot of it's just fear, it's projection. A lot of what we fear is huge projections, you know. And I've, you know, I've got straight friends, male friends, who give me a cuddle, flirt with me, but you know it's never going to go anywhere else. And they are the most comfortable with their sexuality.
Mm.
The ones that want to punch your face in, I'm not so sure about.
Well, I think you're right. I often say, I quite like to have been gay. I'm not gay. If I had been gay, I am sure I would have been one of those awful gay people who just wound everybody up about it. Do you know what I mean? I think it would have been in your face straight away. And what's wrong with me?
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, yeah, I think, but, you know, as I say, it, you know, in my life, you know, my sexuality is not really an issue and hasn't been for many years until somebody else makes it an issue. When I go to buy a loaf of bread or a pint of milk, you know, I just do it in a very regular way. There's no gay way of doing it, you know.
I probably do it in a more gay way than you do, in fact, when I think about it.
I could try harder, obviously.
George, good to talk to you. Listen, I've enjoyed it. If people haven't heard the new single, it really, it's worth, and if you're religious, whether you're a Muslim, whether you're a Baptist, I don't know, an Anglican, a Christian atheist or something, listen to the words of the song My God, because I think it probably answers an awful lot of questions that are causing the world problems today.
Oh, bless you.
George, thanks, mate.
Bye.
I noticed on that, Robbo, you were very quiet. Wasn't there something you wanted to ask George?
The most important thing I wanted to ask George was, can we play his track? And he's given us permission.
Yeah, have you heard the new single?
I have. I think we should play it now.
It's really good. It's excellent. Okay, this is George. It's called My God Competition right after this.
Book of God, and I turn to him and say, I wouldn't be here, my friend, if I had no faith. Here in the darkness, I became the light. I had to get it wrong to get it right. He crossed himself and I shook my head. He said, Jesus loves you, don't you know? My God is bigger than your God. My God is better than yours. Put your bombs away, you need a little more faith. Don't you know what your heart is for? You know what your heart is for. Saw the devil down in New York City, all dressed up like a saint. You were in your thorny crown and wore paint. Precinct number 6, the blue boys took you down. Watch you fall apart like Faye in Chinatown. I crossed myself and he shook his head. I said, Jesus loves me, don't you know? Show your heart,
Don't you know what your heart is for? You should know what your heart is for. Kiss the window.
It's always good to talk to George. I haven't spoken to George for that long. I can't remember ever having such a long conversation with him. Anyway, you can always play it again. You can always tell your friends to join us here on the James Whale Radio Show. Show 19, if you go to the website, with Boy George. And that was his current single. As he said to me in the programme, he thought there might be more controversy. But I think if you listen to the words of that song, it's just so true, isn't it? I'd love to hear what, whether you're a Muslim, whether you're a Christian or whatever, I'd love to know what you think about that particular song. And again, as I say, get in touch with the programme, let me know, and maybe we can mention your thoughts on next week's programme. Now, we always like to do a competition, and it's a really simple competition. You will win a copy of my autobiography, the written one, and you will win a copy of Gate 36 by Electropilot, which is pretty good.
Yeah, and Parry Ray's EP, 7 Days, that's good.
You're going to win that as well?
Yep.
Mark Dewhurst. Wasn't there a chain of butchers called Dewhurst?
Yes.
There was, wasn't there?
Mm.
Do you think he might be an heir to the Dewhurst fortune?
An interesting man you could meet.
Oh, an interesting man you could meet.
Mm.
That was very clever. I wouldn't be against, of course, having a few adverts for Dewhurst the Butchers on the programme. How would that sit with vegetarians, though?
They could take their earplugs out their ears.
Yeah, good point. Anyway, Mark, well done. You won the book, the CDs. This week, you have a chance of winning it. All you've got to do is... In fact, listen, why should I do this, Rob? You share what people have to do.
Well, share's the right word. Just go to James's Facebook page, facebook.com/JamesWhale Radio, and share the show. And we'll just pick a winner from the list of people that have shared it.
Okay, so there we are, as Rob said. Go to facebook.com/JamesWhale Radio. Thank you for all the comments on Facebook. I do enjoy reading them. And as you know, I'm far more likely to reply, though, immediately on Twitter. I do like Twitter. At the James Whale. And just to remind you, talking about things we give away for free, we've got a deal going with Love Film as well. And if you go to the website, jameswhaleradio.co.uk, click on the Love Film banner and you will get, register with them, you will get a month of free movies. So a couple of things you can get over there. And by doing it, it helps the program. So please check out the website and have a look around there as well. Now, what about this weather? I did mention the weather with George. He doesn't get upset about it, but it's just depressing, isn't it? And do you know the most depressing thing of this is listening to what the politicians are going to do? Now, David Cameron has said, after quite a lot of encouragement, that he's going to get the companies out there dredging the rivers to alleviate the flooding in the future. And then you've got the environmentalists saying, oh, no, no, we don't want to do that. Don't want to dredge the rivers. We want to plant trees all over the place. It'll suck the water up. I feel so heartily sorry for the people of this country. We have ignored our rivers. These are my thoughts, and you share yours with me in the usual way, but these are my thoughts on this. We have ignored our rivers and the ecology of our countryside for so long. You can tell when you drive through the countryside in this country, do you see the ditches dug out? Do you see the along the sides of the roads in the country kept trim and looked after? You do when you're on the continent. Do you see our roundabouts maintained and looked after? No, you don't. Do you see the verges cut? No. All of this leads to making it difficult. If our ditches along the roadsides were dug out in the country, the water would have somewhere to go. Had they looked after the rivers over the years, they just didn't bother. They just didn't bother. You know, we just thought, oh, we're more important than we don't bother with that. We could have alleviated this a long time ago, to a certain extent, not to everything. Climate changes, we have to adapt to it, but we don't look after the country. And now we're having the environmentalists and the governments arguing about what is the best thing to do. And the people who live in the areas where this has happened have been completely and utterly ignored. I am so thankful I don't live in a flooded area. I have done. I think I would be absolutely beside myself. Now, Rob lives in North Wales.
I do.
When we're not doing this programme. Well, he lives in North Wales when we are doing it. And Wales has had terrific flooding.
It's not great.
Terrific flooding. And what are they doing about it?
Nothing. Nothing at all. And I want to know how these trees are going to help, because you plant a tree, and a tree takes years to grow.
If you plant, if what the environmentalists are saying, no, you don't want to dredge the rivers, oh, it ruins the ecology and upsets the animals, and to a certain extent, they're right. The rivers should have been regularly dredged, particularly down at the mouths of the rivers, years and years ago. And the rivers should be kept clear all the way along. We don't have river management. We skimp on all that sort of thing. And now, of course, they're all going to argue, oh, well, what we need to do is flood a bit of farmland and plant some willow trees. Willows grow very quickly. They suck up a lot of water. We want to make wetland habitat so we can attract more birds here for the bird watchers and everything. Probably don't want to do that on a farm where the farmers are working. Or we've got to pay farmers not to do anything anymore, which seems to be fairly ridiculous. We need to produce food for everybody. I'm just a bit sick of this, that, you know, we sit there, it's like twiddling your thumbs whilst Rome burns, or what was the saying? And I really think that the politicians have to start listening again to the people. And the environmentalists, yes, okay, it might be nice, and you might have lesser spotted toads living in so-and-so, but we can, you know, there has to be a balance between how mankind can live with the environment. And the one thing that really makes me think that they don't seem to know what they're doing at the moment is they left it. After we had floods a couple of years ago, they still didn't sort out the rivers. They didn't look at the flood defences. In fact, what they did was cut back the amount of money they spent on it. I suppose that was so we could buy more military aid or give more aid abroad. I don't know. That's slightly controversial. But your thoughts on this, particularly if you live in flooded areas. We must actually be coming up to near the end of the programme at the moment, mustn't we?
Yep, we may have even overrun.
Well, we can't overrun, can we?
No, we'll just get cut off.
No, we can't overrun. But listen, thank you very much indeed for joining us this week. Your thoughts on those subjects and others, and if you miss me, of course you can hear me on BBC Essex's Breakfast Show from 6 until 9, Monday to Friday. And of course you can, well, you can hear me over and over and over again on this programme, because you can just, you can download it, you can listen to it again, and you can download the other 15 or 16 programs as well that we've been doing since we started. So that's it. Thank you to all the radio stations that take us as well. And whatever you're doing, have a good week. Keep out of the water. Say goodbye, Rob.
Goodbye, Rob.
James Whale, the voice of reason on the James Whale Radio Show.
You're listening to the James Whale Radio Show. For more information, visit www.jameswhaleradio.co.uk. Why not check us out on facebook.com/jameswhaleradioshow or follow James on Twitter @thejameswhale. James Whale, the voice of reason.